Hello and welcome back to the podcast. So Jeremiah 17, 1 to 11. Judah's sin is engraved with an iron tool, inscribed with a flint point on the tablets of their hearts and on the horns of their altars. Even their children remember their altars and Asherah poles beside the spreading trees and on the high hills. My mountain in the land and your wealth and all your treasures I will give away as plunder, together with your high places, because of sin throughout your country. Through your own fault, you will lose the inheritance I gave you. I will enslave you to your enemies in a land you do not know, for you have kindled my anger, and it will burn forever. This is what the Lord says. Cursed is the one who trusts in man, who draws strength from mere flesh, and whose heart turns away from the Lord. That person will be like a bush in the wastelands. They will not see prosperity when it comes. They will dwell in the parched places of the desert, in a salt land where no one lives. But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worry in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? I, the Lord, search the heart and examine the mind to reward each person according to their conduct, according to what their deeds deserve. Like a partridge that hatches eggs it did not lay are those who gain riches by unjust means. When their lives are half gone, their riches will desert them, and in the end, they will prove to be fools. So in today's world, we have a fascination, don't we? We're looking after our hearts. It distinguishes our breakfast cereals. Whole grain for a healthy heart used to be the slogan, wasn't it? Our watches nowadays have heart rate monitors built right into them, measuring our heart rate every minute. I mean, if you ask me, I can pull up a chart of the last 5-6 years of my heart rate right on my phone. We all want to keep our hearts healthy, don't we? There's good reason, isn't there? An unhealthy heart affects all sorts of other things. You can just find pictures online of hearts that are in, well, not good health. In fact, to ignore or to not know about a heart issue is deadly. In the UK alone, 12 people, fit and healthy under the age of 35, die each week from an undiagnosed heart condition. See, to ignore or not know about a heart issue is deadly. And we spend money, we spend time, we spend energy on our physical hearts. But Jeremiah, in this passage this evening, wants us to focus on an even bigger problem, our spiritual hearts. So a condition so serious, it can only be solved by something radical, a completely new heart. And when we turn to the Bible, we see the heart is a picture of our internal desires. It's the place where we reason, the place where we reflect. It's the inner driver of our outward behaviour. Our heart, or our inner man. The Bible thinks that is far more important than our physical heart. It can be tempting, can't it, to think that a metaphor means it's not so serious. But that would be to fall into the same trap as ignoring the physical heart issue. This matter here in this chapter is of the utmost seriousness to our health and our eternal destiny. So this evening, we're going to let the words of Jeremiah show us our hearts, to tell us what we should think about our hearts. Because as I've already said, to ignore or to not know about a heart issue, physical or metaphorical, is deadly. So what's this diagnosis that Jeremiah gives us about our hearts? Why is it so serious that only a complete heart transplant is going to do? Well, it's because, you can see in verse 9 there, our old heart is beyond cure. Jeremiah's going to show us three things this evening about the human heart. Three things we're going to look at. Firstly, the heart is hopelessly prone to sin. Secondly, the heart is inevitably shown in what we trust. And thirdly, the heart is completely known by God. Prone, shown, known. Three realities about our heart that leave us with no hope in ourselves, but will point us straight forward to the solution in Jeremiah 31. Let's have a look at each in turn, shall we? First one, the heart is hopelessly prone to sin. You can see that in verses 1 to 4 of Jeremiah 17 this evening. You see, up until this point, Jeremiah has been telling the people of his day that they have a serious heart problem. Chapter 7 of Jeremiah, God's words that's come through Jeremiah, reminds the people of Israel that they have a family history of heart disease. God says this, Jeremiah 7 verse 23, I gave them this command, obey me and I will be your God and you will be my people. Walk in obedience to all I command you that it may go well with you. But they did not listen or pay attention. Instead, they followed the stubborn inclinations of their evil hearts. They went backwards, not forwards. See, although God had commanded his people to live his way, they hadn't listened. They had turned and walked in their own counsel. Well, as that verse says, they followed the stubborn inclinations of their evil hearts. Jeremiah gets that phrase directly out of the book of Deuteronomy. The heart issue has been an issue for Israel ever since the very beginning. But it's not just them. It goes even further back. Genesis chapter 6, in Noah's day, after the flood as well, God says every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. You might remember from our growth group study there, it doesn't change on the other side of the flood. It's a damning indictment, isn't it? Every human descended from Noah, that's every human. In fact, every human descended from Adam, that's every human, has this heart problem. And here in Jeremiah 17, the picture is fleshed out for us even further. Verse 1. Judah's sin is engraved with an iron tool, inscribed with a flint point on the tablets of their hearts and on the horns of their altars. It's a common problem, isn't it? When we talk about sin, we often think of sin being something we occasionally do. A mistake here, a slip up there. Jeremiah shatters that here. Do you see the image? The image here in Jeremiah 17 is of a permanent state. It's a picture of sin that really underlines its impact upon us. You see, sin isn't just written on Judah's heart. It's engraved there. Not just with a pencil or a pen, but with an iron tool with a point of flint. This isn't a smudge that can be erased or a stain that could be washed out. It is carved in, it is etched in, it is permanent. It is defining who they are at their very core. We guard our sofas from toddlers with permanent markers. How much more we should guard our hearts from sin with its iron tool of flint. See, sin on the heart isn't just a passing trait. The heart is hopelessly prone to sin. This isn't just a once every so often. Instead, this is what governs lives. The end of verse 1 there. It also governs their relationship with God. You see, Israel and Jeremiah, they've forgotten the Lord. And instead, they built many, many altars to other gods. They're worshipping the wrong people in the wrong places. The heart engraved with sin is turned away from God. And in doing so, it is turned away from life. I mean, we know that in the story of Israel, don't we? Verse 4 is really clear here. They forfeit their land in the stubbornness of their hearts. They lose the place of blessing where God has set his name. They repeat what their forefathers have done. They repeat exactly what Adam did back in Genesis chapter 3. And Adam shows us that is what humanity is like. What was true for Adam is true for Israel, is true for humanity as a whole. We don't just commit sin. Our natural heart produces sin as naturally as an apple tree produces apples. Having a heart that is prone to sin is a massive issue, isn't it? We can see that here. It's hereditary. It's history that repeats itself. It is family heart disease. It is an issue that's going to need addressing. And so as we see this issue, it should be causing us to long for a solution. It should cause us to long for a new heart, as Jeremiah is going to promise shortly. In fact, we get there in Jeremiah chapter 31. Up there on the screen, there it is. So in Jeremiah 31, we're told about a new covenant. A new covenant that specifically deals with the heart here. Just notice how it contrasts with chapter 17. This is the covenant I will make with the people of Israel after that time, declares the Lord. I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts. I will be their God. They will be my people. Why do we need the promise of the new heart? Well, you see there, can't you? God is going to replace the heart that is engraved with sin. He's going to write something new on it. He's going to write his law on it, his words, his instruction. Jeremiah's hearers are meant to trust God for the fix. They're to trust him for their salvation, even in the midst of the looming exile that's coming. And that trust is where Jeremiah focuses next. Second point this evening, the heart is inevitably shown in what you trust. Verses 5 to 8, we get spot the difference. Verse 5 and 6, they speak of the cursed man. The cursed man is the man who trusts in man. And in doing so, they're turning their heart away from God. You see here, the thing that a person trusts here shows their heart. It puts their heart on display. The two are connected. The heart is inevitably shown in what you trust. For Jeremiah compares these two men to plants. The cursed man is like a bush in the desert. I know a little bit about gardening. Let's see if this works. If you want to have a healthy plant, don't plant it in the desert, right? Compare that to verses 7 and 8, to the blessed man. The blessed man is the one who trusts the Lord. Their heart, as we can imply here, has not turned from the Lord. They're like a tree planted by water. They're fruitful. They have no reason to fear. Sounds familiar for Psalm 1, doesn't it? The Psalm 1 man. Jeremiah's big point here is this. It is easy to see where your own heart is. Of course, we can't see the heart, but we can see the actions. And those two connect together because the heart is inevitably shown in what you trust. So this evening, let me ask you, where is your trust placed? When problems arise, where do you turn first? To your own resources, your own connections, your own intelligence? Or do you instinctively reach out for prayer, for God's word, for God's promises? Or Jeremiah would say, which plant are you? Are you the withered, desperate bush gasping in the wasteland? Or the flourishing tree with roots that are deep in living water? Are you the salt-starved shrub that produces nothing? Or the lusciously leaved laurel that fears no drought? When we see that the New Covenant deals with the heart issue, but the New Testament does warn us again and again about drifting. See, our trust can begin to wane in the day-to-day busyness of life. The author of Hebrews calls us, see to it, brothers and sisters, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God. See, it's not that we wake up one morning and we decide, you know what, I'm not going to trust God any longer. It's a gradual slipping away. It's a drift. We need to daily place our trust in him. That's what we're called to do as brothers and sisters in the church. To daily exhort one another to trust in the Lord, not to trust in flesh. It's quite simple, really, isn't it? There isn't a spectrum of choices. It's binary. Trust in man, and therefore turn away from God, or trust in the Lord, and be blessed. One path is going to lead to certain death, the other to flourishing life. And make no mistake, choosing to not choose is still a choice. Because ignoring a heart issue is deadly. A heart revealed in its misplaced trust, that is why we need a new heart. It does raise a question, doesn't it? What about those people who seem to be doing well without God? The ones who look like that well-watered tree, but they don't do anything with God at all. I mean, they don't look like a parched plant, do they? In fact, they look like they're doing just fine. In the book of Jeremiah, people were ignoring God and gaining riches for themselves. They seem to be doing okay, thank you very much. We see the same today, don't we? Our non-believing friends, neighbours, it can appear that they have it all sorted. Even in our own lives, we can see just how tempting it is to put our trust in man, yet give the right outward appearance. After all, I could make a dry tree look alive by stapling some oranges to it. But that would miss our final point, because the heart is completely known by God. You see that in verses 9 to 11. The heart is completely known by God. As we see those two choices, we can know that God knows which one we are. I mean, our culture bombards us, isn't it, with that heart language. Just follow your heart. Trust your instincts. Be true to yourself. Jeremiah's diagnosis here demolishes that philosophy. Following a heart that is deceitful above all things and beyond cure would be like following a broken GPS straight off a cliff. Dr. Jeremiah here has examined our hearts thoroughly and now gives us the devastating verdict. Verse 9. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? It's not just some hearts. It's not just a few hearts. It's all hearts. The heart. I mean, to follow your heart would be a terrible idea in light of that diagnosis. The heart is so deceitful, so beyond cure, that it can be hard to understand it sometimes. But there's one person in this passage who does. Do you see that? Verse 10. I, the Lord, search the heart and examine the mind to reward each person according to their conduct, according to what their deeds deserve. You see there, the heart is completely known by God. He can delve into its very deepest parts, into our hearts, into our minds. He knows the very depths of our hearts. He can see the fruit of those trees earlier. He knows all there is to know about us, even those things we wish, we think, are hidden far away. And at the end of the day, you see it right here, God will judge every man. And where we place our trust is going to make all the difference. I mean, it's a bit like a partridge. That's what Jeremiah says, verse 11, isn't it? This bird, probably not the partridge of the pear tree fame. The partridge here is the bird that hatches eggs that are not its own. It's a bird that looks impressive, with its large group of eggs, seemingly prospering through its dishonest gain. But the moment those eggs hatch, the truth is revealed. That's not my parents, says the little bird. See, that's the same as wealth gathered without God. The security that is built on human foundations will eventually abandon us, just like those hatchlings abandon the partridge. Judah here, with all its wealth and treasure, may look like they're doing okay without God. They may look absolutely fine. But when the exile comes, they're going to look like a little silly partridge. Their foolishness is going to be put on display for all to see. I mean, we need to hear this every day, don't we? The prosperity of the wicked is a passing delusion. God knows each and every heart. And no one can escape that. But here's where the diagnosis, though grim, begins to show a glimmer of hope. If God knows our hearts completely, if God sees the depth of our problem, then God is the only one who knows what we really need. God is the one who knows the cure. And thankfully, he's provided exactly that cure. See, a heart fully exposed before God, that is why we need a new heart. So can you see this evening, this is what I want to drill home, can you see exactly why it is we need that promise of a new heart that Jeremiah is going to take us to? See, the diagnosis is terminal, a heart fully engraved with sin, revealing its misplaced trust, fully exposed before the all-knowing God. It's not just a minor condition that's going to need a lifestyle adjustment. This is spiritual cardiac arrest. As God has spoken through these words, this warning is put on display for us all to hear. The human heart is prone to sin, shown in what you trust, and is known fully by God. To ignore that is deadly. Jeremiah here is laying that out before Israel, that devastating diagnosis. And despite the clarity of the warning, the question remains, are they going to listen? Are they going to acknowledge their desperate heart condition? I mean, you would think, wouldn't you, as we read this, you would hope at least that the answer is, of course, of course. It's just so obvious which way you ought to go. That's the issue here, isn't it? It may seem like a simple life or death choice, but the heart is desperately sick. Who can understand it? As the nation here is plucked up, broken down, destroyed, there is hope for the remnant. There is hope for those who are going to hear this warning and place their trust in the Lord. And the same goes for us. Where's our trust placed today? Again, that's not where you say your trust is placed. That's not where you want other people to think your trust is placed. Where is your trust placed? What do your priorities show? Are you convinced? Are you utterly convinced of your desperate need for a new heart that only God can provide? It's the only solution here. The only solution to this heart trouble is to trust God, to have that radical work of the new covenant done in your life. We take our physical heart seriously. We ought to take our spiritual hearts even more seriously. And as Christians, we rejoice, don't we, that God has begun that heart transformation in us. He has written his law where sin was once engraved. But the warning here remains relevant. How tragic it would be to receive this new heart and drift back to trusting ourselves. How grievous it would be to exchange living water for broken cisterns that hold no water. So as we hear this diagnosis, this promise tonight, we could just nod in academic agreement. We need to let this truth sink deep into those new hearts God has given us. We need to remember daily our complete and utter dependence on Christ. For it's only in him, isn't it, that our hearts of stone have become hearts of flesh. It's only in him that we can find strength to trust God to the very end. That is why we need the new covenant. That is why the Lord's Supper this evening is such a great thing. So we celebrate together. Let's remember the depths of our hearts and the amazingness of this new heart that God has given us.
Well, thank you so much for listening. Any feedback or questions can be sent to the podcast email address, which is podcast@david-couch.com. And I'll see you next time.